Welcome to Tabletop Tommies, episode 6. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Phil.
We're planning to go through each army, highlight the units we think are fun, are interesting, or at the very least useful. Before we do that, today's episode is going to be about how we build armies generally, so when we're talking about units in future episodes, we can very much view it in that context. And we'll be talking about how we build armies both thematically and competitively in this episode. First of all, we're going to start with the theme-based armies and how we pick armies in general. So, Phil, how do you go about picking an army before you build it?
Sure, Johnny. So I pretty much start with what I'm interested in. So I didn't come from another war game when I started playing Bolt Action. I've always been into World War II and history and that sort of stuff. So I started playing Bolt Action because of the history and because of an interest in events. So when I think about what army I'm going to build in Bolt Action, it needs to be something that I find interesting. Particular nation, particular theatre, particular battle or a particular unit. So starting from that, I'll then start digging into and thinking about what would I like to see on the tabletop? And also what do I want to paint? Because I do enjoy painting. I spend quite a lot of time painting as well. So I come at it from that perspective rather than a gaming perspective, having jumped over from another game system and then started playing Bolt Action.
Yeah, you see, I'm more of a gamer generally. So I used to play 40K, as many of the Bolt Action players did at one point, alongside other games. And I moved to Bolt Action because I liked how it was similar but different, the reason a lot of people do. And so actually, some of the times I will be building an army because of how it plays, but the reason I chose Bolt Action over one of the other games that's available is because of the World War II theme. And so sometimes I am as guilty of what you just described there, where I've recently watched a World War II film and I think, wouldn't it be cool to represent that on the tabletop? And so I am a bit of a both worlds kind of guy, which is why, as we talked about in last episode, the Welsh Open is a tournament for me, but also the Welsh Nationals and the other national tournaments are also tournaments for me because I actually play both sides of the coin, really.
Mm-hmm.
What are you painting at the minute? Because you said you're enjoying painting.
So at the moment, I've got I'm finishing off a Japanese army. I have built a French Western Desert army, which we talked about in an earlier episode when we're talking about our armies that are on the table. That's going to be for the Welsh Open later on this year. And I've been looking into and steadily buying, but not yet building or committing, a US Marine force as well.
Nice. One of my favourites, US Marines.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because you've got good game mechanics, but also you basically get all the toys that the US has to offer, really, in terms of the Sherman variants and all the different types of infantry and the infantry weapons like the BARs. You can have loads of BARs, as many as you want, basically, in Marines, which is what I like.
Mm-hmm. Whereas I came at it completely in the other direction. I'd recently rewatched Pacific, the HBO series.
Yeah.
And had that on DVD, showing my age here. and rewatched that on DVD. And the last 12 months or so, I've really started to get into the history of the Pacific Theater and also Southeast Asia as well. So I've kind of come at it from like a historical interest because up until a couple of years ago, 2-3 years ago, I didn't really know a lot about the Pacific or the Southeast Asia theatre, and my knowledge of World War II was very much based on Europe and Normandy. I was born in Portsmouth, grew up in Portsmouth. You got the D-Day Museum there, you had the Royal Marines Museum, and that was kind of my interest in World War II came about growing up in Portsmouth.
Yeah, it's funny what you mentioned in the Pacific TV series because, and this isn't a podcast about TV, but I really liked Band of Brothers. Mm-hmm. I was really into that, off the back of Saving Private Ryan. And so thematically, the sort of the European campaign was always the one that sort of drew me in because mm-hmm. of the D-Day lands, as you say. And ironically, I never really got into the Pacific. And I think the difference in the TV shows was Band of Brothers is very much focused on the one sort of squad, the one platoon. And so you're meeting the same characters repeatedly, whereas I think the Pacific jumps around more. And I just found it a little bit harder to sort of, I don't know, commit to the show as much. But actually, ironically, when I started playing the US in bolt action, just because the Marines were getting more BARs per squad, and also what I realized is I could cheaply start a Marine army.
Yeah.
Because from the infantry boxes, I think you get the bazooka in the box.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bought two infantry boxes. I could then build a couple of bazookas. I can't remember which theater selector I built two originally, but I think it had two bazookas in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to build a sniper, a couple of bazookas, all the Marines I needed. And actually, from that, and then taking them to things like the Welsh Open, then led me to reading more about the war in the Pacific, which I must admit, like you, I knew very little about before I started playing bolt action.
Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't take long for you, Johnny, to buy eight different flamethrower units and put them in your US Army.
I was saying this to you the other day, where I've always liked flamethrowers, regardless of how good they were in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I would take flamethrowers. I just really, because it's one of the ways I like to play these type of games, where I like sort of the all or nothing, high risk, high reward strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm quite happy to throw my infantry right into the line of fire. And so even if flamethrowers were rubbish, which obviously they're not in bolt action, I would still take them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I did start with mainly BARs, and then it wasn't very long before I started sprinkling in some flamethrowers. And now I am more on the, I would say I'm now themed more towards bunkers than I originally was.
That's a fair point. Yeah, that's a fair way of saying it. Yeah.
So generally we're saying you're picking your armies based on sort of battles, campaigns, just things that have piqued your interest historically.
Absolutely, yeah. If I think about my first two armies, so I actually have been playing bolt action for about 18 months, and I probably had some miniatures about 3 or 4 months before that. I bought them in one of the lockdowns in the UK, and I bought them to paint. So I picked up the old Commando plastic box set.
Nice.
And with the support, HQ and support weapons. And I also bought the Winter Germans at the same time. And I just painted them up. And I really enjoyed painting the Commandos as Royal Marines with the green berets and that kind of thing. And there was a personal touch there as well. Member of my family is a former Royal Marine Commando. So there was an element there of you know, being interested in the painting, in a personal history. And as I said earlier, growing up in Portsmouth as well, and the Royal Marines Museums that was here, I'd been there as a kid a lot. And then, you know, with the Marines and Normandy, one of the iconic things is the Centaur.
Yes.
And so I had to have a Centaur for my Marines. And it's utterly rubbish in the game in terms of, the points and the cost and the efficiency. But it is such an iconic, Royal Marine Commando vehicle, vehicle with the Royal Marines, that I had to have it. With my Germans, for example, I got the SDKFZ 7.1/7.2, whichever one's got the armored cab or not, because this is great. It's a quad AA gun on the back of a truck. It's probably overcosted in the game, and if you're playing a single platoon and that's your only armored vehicle, you're not going to do particularly well if someone's bringing heavier tanks. But it's a great looking model. I loved it, and I really enjoyed painting it. And my Winter German force isn't finely tuned in a competitive sense. It's more about what do I like the look of. So say I've got the quad half track. I've got a Kesselbrad, which again is a great model. I love it, but it's not points of, there's no points of efficiency going on there if you get a Panzer Schreck in a Kesselbrad, for example. But that's a great little combo and it looks pretty cool.
Yeah. I think as well, when you choose a specific unit you want to put in, it does make you think about how you're going to build your army around it.
Yeah.
So like when I started Germans, it was all about the tanks. And so took a Tiger, and that really makes you think about how you build your platoon, because now you've spent, if it's 1,000 points, you spent sort of 40% of your points on one tank.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you're not going to be taking loads of veterans then, but then it means, well, how are you going to run the rest of your army to support it without just having loads of squishy squads? And one of the units that I've built an entire army around is just a buffalo. I absolutely love a buffalo because it's just so ridiculously big. And that's one that I always wanted to try with the Marines. And then I could never quite think of an army where, because the problem is if you put 30 Marines in it, it's all your eggs in one basket, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so I could never think of a good way to use it. But actually, when I took on Brits, because it can carry a Bren carrier, I thought actually it's not competitive, but it's a lot of fun. You put a Bren carrier in one, and then you put something else in the Bren carrier, and you've got your nice little Russian doll where each advances. or, because I love a flamethrower, the Wasp, the Bren carrier with a flamethrower on, put that in the Buffalo, and that's a huge amount of fun. It's again not hugely competitive because the problem with the Wasp is it takes one pin, and now you're probably hitting on a six with a flamethrower. So it's not a hugely competitive thing, but it is a lot of fun to go 9 inches with the Buffalo, 9 inches with the Wasp, and then flame something. There's these particular units where you just really want to field them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really find myself having to think about, well, how am I going to slot this into an army such that it's not just 800 points of a normal army, and then I've thrown this 200-point unit.
Yeah.
And that's really the balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I play, you know, Brits, as we know, and I started looking at the Burma Theatre, again, with a personal reason. My great-uncle was a Chindit. Mm-hmm. So when I first started looking into Burma, there were no Gurkhas in sight in my army. It was very much, you know, Chindits and native irregulars. And I love the native irregular, you know, models and so on. You know, I even got, you know, Chindits with LMGs. And you know, we'll probably talk about that in an episode where we talk about British units and stuff. And it was all about, right, how can I build a really cool, you know, jungle proper Chindit force? And then I was like, right, I've got no vehicles. I could probably justify having an air observer and an artillery observer, but I'm going to struggle against, you know, any you know, buddy taking vehicles against me, which is a bit disappointing because I absolutely loved, you know, kit bashing the models and painting them up. So yeah, it's always a challenge. You know, I start looking at something going, that looks really cool, or that really interests me. I get it all made up, and now I'm like, oh, it's a bit rubbish on the game. I'm gonna have to refine it somewhat.
I do enjoy those challenges, though, as a bit of a mental exercise of building a thematic army that can win games if you really do dive into the theme. Because if you do the Tiger with supported with veterans, you're going to have a six dice list. And unless it's kill points and you get lucky with a Tiger shot. But actually, I would say your Chindit one isn't as much. So these ones where you don't get armor actually are a bit of a double-edged sword because, yes, you haven't got a tank, but equally what that means is if someone took an anti-tank, they've wasted all those points on that.
Yeah, they have. And, you know, I do come unstuck, you know, when I come up against a lot of armored vehicles with the Chindits. But so with the air observer, which again, you know, thematically it works. They did have air support and so on from the American planes in Burma. When it does work, it's great. As we know with air observers, they're not worth the points. And you end up, you know, shooting yourself a lot of the time as well. But for that moment when it does work, it's brilliant and it's priceless.
Yeah, that's a point in composition, actually, with the air observer, because that's if you take lots of flak and anti-air units, like say you take a Bofors, there's a strong chance you're going to shoot down your own plane. And so that's one of those areas where when you're building the list, you do have to think about your force composition in terms of, is this unit going to help this unit or is it going to hurt this unit?
Yeah, yeah. And I think just on, you know, in terms of what I'm doing at the moment or building at the moment, so the French Western Desert, that's because I really want to paint up the Perry French Foreign Legion minis. I think they look great. And I've also been, you know, using some of my British Burma force to represent Aussies, again, because I wanted to paint up the Pap ones.
Yeah.
And I really like the models. And yeah, they are good fun in the game as well in terms of how the Pap ones can forward deploy. So yeah, away from, you know, things like the Welsh Nationals, generally speaking, I'm going to take something that is thematic and, you know, there is a historical element. I'm definitely not a rivet counter. And then what I'll try and do is make it competitive, but within a theme or within a context, rather than just picking the best units I possibly can into whatever the restrictions are for the event and, you know, going from there.
Yeah, the Siege of Budapest is one of the best themes I find for if you are going to a tournament and you want a nice thematic army, and if you're interested in that period and that sort of area of the war, I find the selectors for that aren't super restrictive, and so they allow you to use the collection you've already got alongside some new units you want to try out, but also they're not so limiting that, I don't know, like the D-Day machine gun platoon where all you've got is machine guns basically and so if you face a tank platoon you're in trouble. They're not as limiting as that,
yeah,
and they're still quite nicely balanced. And if you happen to be interested in an area of the war where the campaign book has been written in a way where the theatre selectors are reasonably balanced and you've got a little bit of everything, I suppose actually late war when they're just throwing anything at the wall to see what works.
Yes.
It's probably a good time for that because it allows you to sort of pick and choose these little units to just fill in a niche in your army, like, oh dear, I don't have enough anti-tank. Okay, well, I'll take the is it the Panzerrem? The Hungarian bazooka, basically, that they made late in the war. And oh, actually, we had some Panzerfaust because the Germans brought them over. Those kind of things where you can late war. I do like that for being able to fill the niches. Having said that, the early war's fun because you've got to try and think about how you're building your list in a way, because you haven't got those big anti-tank guns and things, or the shape charges, and so you're having to think, if I do come up against a Sherman, how am I going to deal with it? Because really, all I've got is howitzers and anti-tank rifles, so I'm going to have to rely on the howitzer, I think.
I find that, I've got some, British Paras, for example, and if I'm really leaning into it in terms of like a market garden type list with before the tanks arrived, I'm like, right, I've got a Piat, maybe a flamethrower. How's this one going to work out? Or like a commando raid, would be another situation where you got to, be pretty canny or just lucky to actually deal with any armor if you are taking that either that light, the light infantry in terms of special forces like the commandos and the airborne, or that early war stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny actually because the value of a unit isn't necessarily tied to how effective it is at taking out the tank. So, like the Piat, if you put that somewhere out of sight so the enemy can't shoot it without exposing themselves, it actually serves its function of keeping the tank back a lot of the time.
Yes.
And so, actually, if you have got a theater selector that all you have is two Piats, you might actually be able to use that to stop the tank, even if you don't touch the tank with them, just by deploying them cleverly. And that's really something you have to think about early on, because you've got to think, okay, so if I am going to do that, what I might want to do is put them in a transport to rush them up into the middle of the table early game. But if I do that, then I'm going to have to support them, because otherwise the infantry are going to take them out. And so you are having to think about that sort of at the list composition phase. What do I have to take out? Tanks. And equally, if I lose my Piats, do I have a backup plan?
Quite often I don't. Sliding into force composition, Johnny, do you want to just talk us through how you go about structuring your force? Once you've decided the nation and maybe the theatre, if you are, going into a theatre platoon or just more generally.
Yeah, so I'll talk some competitive side now then, I think, on that note. So, because generally what I'm doing is I'm thinking, what's the overall plan? So what I've found is if I lean into my play style, like what I'm most comfortable playing, then I tend to be most successful with an army. And the play styles that I've found across multiple games historically works for me is either sort of your all-out speed, sort of what you might call a glass hammer, sort of where you'll get right in the face. And quite often you'll use that as a sort of a hammer and anvil style as well, where you'll have one part of your army that's swinging round really fast, and then another part of your army that just acts as the anvil, where to hit against essentially. And so that's one style that I've used a lot. The other style that I tend to lean into is sort of the big guns side, where so the all-out speed will be something like cavalry forces or heavily mobilized in transport. The other side is very slow, but equally powerful, because I'm looking at big guns like multiple rocket launchers, howitzers, something like. And if I'm leaning that way, and again, this is where if you've got a few collections or if you aren't set on one specific area of the war. Because if I'm doing all out speed, I'll do something like Brits and Brens or US and Dodgers. If I'm leaning more towards the big gun side, I'll probably go Germans. Because then you could do your artillery on an armored fighting vehicle, you could do your artillery in the artillery slot, and you could have a heavy mortar. And so you could have three units, and actually, that might be a place where I might take a first lieutenant, because with the German special rule, because you get a snap to three units with a first lieutenant, you could put them in the middle of those three and snap them all together. But of course, that's something you've had to plan. That's something that you're going to do on the tabletop, but I've planned that all the way back at this, like the moment I've sat down to write the list. And that's a lot of fun. And again, because I'm taking a first hand, that might mean I could take an inexperienced, I don't know, Nebelwerfer, for example. And so that's the sort of things I'm thinking about. So once I've got that overall plan, I'm then sort of choosing units, as I've just described there, according to what I'm trying to do. And what I'm trying to do is sort of maximize my output while minimizing the points cost. So, like that example there, where I was saying, because I've got the first lieutenant there to snap them all to, he's given the plus two boost. So, actually, having an inexperienced heavy mortar is not as big of a loss compared to usual. And so, what I'd quite often describe as sort of like zero fat lists, where you cut out as much as you can without affecting the effectiveness of the unit. So for the mortar, being inexperienced usually doesn't affect it. The only time that affects it is when it fails that order test. So if in my building phase I've planned that first lieutenant, then actually I haven't really lost anything by taking them inexperienced.
Just talking about cutting the fat out. I know that's in reference to the units themselves rather than the number of units. Something I've noticed, with your list, Johnny, is I don't see you taking a mule team. I don't see you taking, a medic for a cheap order dice or things like that. Whereas, other people who talk on podcasts and that sort of thing will often talk about, getting that extra order dice, whereas you're very much a case of if this dice can't do anything in terms of it can't give a pin out, there's not a lot of point for, I'd rather have one fewer dice but more effective units than chuck a mule in or chuck a medic in or chaplain or whatever.
Yeah, 100%. I've always subscribed to the I want every single point that I spend to be able to do something offensive. And it doesn't have to be something huge. It could just be doing a pin every now and then. And I really like sort of an inexperienced. The one that I always take is the inexperienced machine guns with the Americans, which everyone always laughs at because they're supposed to be the worst units in the game. But every now and then, I'll roll sort of three sixes in a row and take out a sniper team. Or, I don't know, maybe take out a forward observer. And it cost me 35 points to bring that unit. And when he's not doing that, he might be on ambush, which is admittedly, it's not going to do a huge amount. But you're still not going to run into the open in front of it, even though it's an inexperienced machine gun. And so, yeah, so those are the types of cheap units I like. The mule, I have been tempted to run a mule before, and I think I actually have. But what I tend to find happens is there's usually something else that I want, and then I end up just cutting it. There's been times I've put a mule in a list and then just cut it because exactly that way I've thought, actually, he's not going to do anything for me, or worse, I'm going to lose him because he's going to be, especially in prep bombardment missions. I've already planned what's going in reserve, and he's not one of those units that's going in reserve, which means he's going to be on the table. If the prep bombardment goes off, he's got a strong chance of going. And so, actually, maybe I'm better off having, I don't know, 14 dice instead of 15 than having the mule. And the only time I do run units like the mule that don't do anything on the tabletop for me is if I do want to do a reserve like that. So, say for example, I want to reserve four units and four transports, and I've got 15 dice and I've got 4 points left, then I might throw a mule in just to make it 16 dice so that I can reserve those 8 units.
And that's a really good point. And we've talked about this a lot over the last, year or so, that you will, not just in terms of what units you're taking, but you'll look at the total number of units. And you'll think about, okay, in a mission where I've got to reserve, up to half my list, or I can, outflank whatever. You're thinking about, well, what am I going to do in sectors, for example, or
Oh, yeah.
what's going to be deployed in prep bombardment, double envelopment, that kind of stuff. And there's nothing worse than having that, odd number of dice, and you get to that mission where you have to take half of it off the table, and you're like, well, actually, that I can't slice my army in the right way.
100%. And that is because the other thing with that as well is if you turn up, it's not so bad if you're sort of at a friend's house or down a club and you're having to sort of scratch your head and think, okay, so I've got 13 dice. Half of that rounded down, they need to go on reserve. Okay, which units am I going to pick? And then you're going through your army list and you're looking at your tray laid out and you're picking your units and then, oh, well, maybe I should put this on. Maybe should I put the Sherman on or should I keep the Sherman back? And that's fine, as I say, at like a friend's house or down the club, but when it's a tournament and you're up against the clock anyway, you've created false pressure for yourself there by having to think on the spot before you're about to go into a game where you're going to have to think for sort of 2 hours straight. And so actually you can front end that decision, and you can even create yourself two battle plans where you go, okay, If the enemy has a lot of anti-tank, then the Sherman goes in reserve. If he doesn't, then I'll put the Sherman on the table and I'll instead reserve the commandos, for example. And you could create sort of an A, B, C deployment for yourself, even if you wanted. But there's nothing worse than when you're tired and when you're already feeling a bit of pressure because you've had to race to the table, to having to make those decisions. Because then what happens invariably when I've done that myself is it means turn one, or even during the deployment phase, I'll do a stupid mistake because I've overworked myself already. I'm still thinking about my deployment. Was that the right thing to reserve? And then I'll do something stupid. And then, of course, now you're playing to catch up on that, which means you're now thinking about even more things because you think, oh, how do I get myself out of this bind? And so, yeah, the reserves thing is something I'm thinking about, as you say, during the list building phase. Is there a way I can keep my soft skins off the table because they're a liability in prep? Yeah, that kind of stuff.
We talked briefly in the first episode when we were going through the Welsh Nationals, because Rhys released the missions after list deadline but before the day. You were able to go through the missions and think about how you were going to prepare or how you're going to play the game, depending on who you were facing as well in advance. And that's not something that only Rhys has done at the Welsh Nationals. That's something you see a lot of. I know we're kind of detouring from force composition to back to events, but I do appreciate it when I go to events when I know what the missions are or what they could be, because there are 12 missions and it's going to be six of them, for example, because it allows me to think about what I would do in each situation, depending on the mission with the army I've chosen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Even if I don't know the specific missions, you do know that it's going to be either kill points, objectives, or movement. And so if I've built that transport heavy army or the cavalry army, I know that I've got the movement mission probably down. So I don't need to worry about that. Objectives, probably okay with that as well. But kill points, I might be a bit of a liability because the rifles could take out my soft skin transports. Or because I've had to save points to squeeze the transports in, my squads are a bit squishier, which means that I'm going to have to be killing stuff. And so if I'm taking a high dice count army, sort of soft skinned, high dice count army, I'm thinking about, well, what units am I expecting to take a dice? Because in a lot of the missions, you can win just by pinning, like in objectives and movement. If I just put out 20 pins a turn across your army, I've probably got the game because you're going to fail enough order tests that you're not going to get up onto the objective. But in kill points, that's not going to be enough because if I leave every single one of your squads with three men left and don't take a dice, and then you just happen to get a lucky rifle shot against a jeep or against a dodge, or you sort of get a lucky sniper shot on, I don't know, the mortar or something, then I'm dice behind, so I need units. And that's one of the reasons that I really like units like the multiple rocket launcher because, yes, it's super inconsistent, but when it hits, it tends to take a dice. And howitzers are great for that as well because the howitzers, I really like dual purpose weapons. So a heavy howitzer, or even actually, sorry, a medium howitzer is probably sufficient for this role. With a 3+, if you hit a squad of infantry, most of the time, you're going to destroy that squad, especially if they're not stubborn, because you're probably going to kill at least half of them, force a test with -3 pins. There's a good chance you're going to take the squad.
Yeah, D3 pins, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so most of the time, you're going to take that squad. And then if it's a tank, then you can play the pinning game. Like, yes, I can't take your Sherman on the front armor, but if I can do D3 pins a turn on it, I'll just keep you rallying for the rest of the game. And so I love those units, and I really dislike units that are the opposite. Like, if I bring a heavy anti-tank gun, or even a medium anti-tank gun, and you don't bring a tank, that's not very good against infantry. And so, compared to, I could have taken a 25 pounder for 50 points, saved myself a load of points there, and got a very similar sort of effect where, yes, I had a little bit of anti-tank, but it means if you don't bring a tank, I've still got the light howitzer around.
Something I've seen with your list, Johnny, is that you don't tend to take like what people call the mixed bag platoon, where you've got a bit of
No.
everything and not a lot of one thing. Yours are very much focused on doing one thing very well, or one, maybe two things very well, and the other stuff you're like, do you know what? I can't be bothered, like, because I'm just going to focus on what I want to do rather than trying to spread my options and react to what's in front of me in terms of what the opponent might bring.
Yeah, that's funny actually. But before I talk about that, actually, why? Because you do tend to run sort of the more general platoon, don't you? So why do you do that?
I think so. I generally play vets,
Yeah.
and I think that's just, starting off with commandos and I quite liked it when I was playing Germans and sort of like, oh, let's get some vet Germans with assault rifles, all the kind of classic mistakes you make at the start. So I generally play vets, which means I've generally got a lower order dice count. And therefore, I'm a bit like, okay, I don't feel like I've got enough to lean in just to one particular style. So I do kind of back myself just in case. It's very rare that I'll have, the sniper, the flamethrower, the mortar, the artillery, and that kind of thing, because partly because I haven't got the points. But I'll probably have two or three of those things, rather than just like having one of them. I play Gurkhas, when I'm playing Brits competitively, but I don't play particularly assaulty. I'm probably playing them suboptimally. It's more a case, I tend to play kind of skirmishing, albeit with I've got a bunch of Gurkhas. So if I do get close or you get close, I can deal with it in close assault. But actually, I'd rather, stand off a little bit and put the pins out or put some HE down, rather than just rushing forward with a bunch of Gurkhas and seeing what happens at the end of it, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's funny, I play Gurkhas the same way. When I play Gurkhas with my Brits, I'll run them as 5-man squads with SMGs, and then I don't tend to charge with them because no matter how good a unit is in close quarters, it doesn't take much for you to lose it. Just one bad roll and you've lost the squad. And so what I'm tending to use the Gurkhas for is, as you say, I'll use them as either speed bumps or as just a disincentive to stop you coming towards that area. And then, yeah, if they can go down an objective, those little 5-man Gurkha squads are very hard to shift with the stubborn, the parrot Gurkhas.
And I certainly noticed recently, as I've been playing, Gurkhas more often, a lot of the time, my opponent will just hide from them or stay away from them, but they're focusing on them. They're in the sense of they're reacting to where the Gurkhas are, which means I can then do stuff, do things with my other stuff. And actually, it's more often than not, it's the tanks and the flamethrowers and the artillery which are taking the dice off my opponent. My Gurkhas are there focusing their attention, but the other stuff's doing the hard work.
Yeah, and that's what I'm doing with my Marines when I'm playing Hammer and Anvil. I've got the multi-launcher, I've got a heavy mortar, I've got those three machine guns, and those machine guns are going in ambush, so now you're thinking about that. Oh, I don't really want to walk in the ambush. How do I get to your artillery piece? And you're thinking about that, but actually I've put maybe 5 squads of engineers now flank, and that's what's going to win the game for me, hopefully. And the multi-launcher and the heavy mortar is just there because I have to deploy something. And so it might as well be something that if I do get the lucky six, I'm going to take a unit. But it is causing that distraction. I mean, the reason I'm kind of single-minded as opposed to sort of the broad is because I do enjoy sort of the game of, right, what if I built an army that did this? So what if I built an army that was as fast as possible? So the recce platoon I was building, the game with that, and the reason I didn't put a sniper in and a mortar is I thought, what would happen if you did build a platoon where everything was fully mounted and every turn you're moving forward? How would that play? And what tends to happen, the reason it tends to work quite well is because most people generally are playing quite mixed platoons, so they can have sort of each of the units they like, which means that when you do a single thing, when like your entire army is just doing one thing, I don't know, like just racing across the board at you because all I've got is some machine guns, it's usually out of the experience of the other player. And so they, even though they might be able to counter it really easily, you'll quite often catch them off guard where they weren't expecting it. And so they don't do the counter that they should have done, like maybe just sitting on the back line and going in ambush because they were expecting you to really sort of tactically like push up the board behind cover, and instead you've just gone straight down the roads in the open, just risking first dice next turn, which is what I am quite prone to do, to be honest.
Yeah, you are, yeah, to be fair.
And it works. The reason that sometimes works is if you can sort of hedge your bet. So that Marine army I was talking about, if I do put 5 engineers and 5 dodgers in the outflank, if one of them fails the outflank roll to come on, not a problem, I've got 4 more. And equally, if I bring them on from our back lines and race 24 inches across the table, again, if I lose one because I didn't get first dice turn 2, not the end of the world because I've got another four.
Yeah.
And so it's, yes, I'm playing like high risk, high reward, but at the same time, I am trying to hedge my bets a bit.
And you know, one of the features of your armies, Johnny, is that it is a high order dice count. So, you know, take your Marines, you know, you've got a bunch of engineers and dodges, but what you haven't done is then also spent 200 points on an armor nine tank. You know, it's like I'm going to spend 60 points on a, you know, on a dodge with an anti-tank gun on the back of it. So you're not, you it's not like, oh, I've got this like token unit, which is really expensive, and then a load of cheap stuff. It's like no, everything's cheap, and therefore I've got 18, 19, 20 dice at 1,000 points. So you can play, you know, the betting game in terms of how many dice I've got relative to the opponent. Whereas because I play vets, more often than not, I've got the same or fewer dice than my opponent has. And therefore I have to be a bit more cautious, and my play style generally is cautious, because I don't want to start losing dice too early. Because if I'm down to, you know, if I start on 14, 15 and I'm down to 10, 11, 12, you know, by turn three, it's like, okay, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah, 100%. And that's where, if I'm playing low order dice, it'll tend to be so. If I, like that German platoon I was talking about, where it's heavy artillery, that'll be a low order dice list because I am going to take the first lieutenant. I'm taking a few big guns, and then I might take veterans to sort of stop you getting close to them. And I don't mind if I don't get the very first dice because I've hedged my bets where if I don't get the first dice, that's fine because as soon as I get a dice, I'm going to do the snap two. And so I'm going to get three dice on the trot. And so again, even in the low order dice, I'm thinking, how do I hedge my bets a bit? And things like Hungarians, if I can take two artillery pieces, because maybe I'm taking Hungarians with Axis support or Romanians with the French doctrine, so you get the free arty piece. There again, it doesn't matter as much if my howitzer gets to go first, because the biggest risk I find when I run a howitzer is the mortar fire coming in. If I've got two artillery pieces, I can always recrew. But again, that's something I need to be thinking about when I'm building my list and when I'm deploying, because if I do think I'm going to need to recruit at some point during the game, I obviously need to be within the proximity to do it.
Yeah, I think if I was to start bolt action again, knowing what I know now, if I was going to build an army, you know, to be as competitive as possible, I absolutely would be playing Soviets as well as, you know, Gurkhas and so on. I haven't bought any Soviets. I'm not interested in buying any Soviets. But if I look back on, you know, the armies I've chosen to build over the last year and a half, it's stuff that's interested me. Some of them haven't been particularly good at all, and they may well end up on eBay down the line. Whereas others have been kind of tuned a little bit, so they are, you know, they're historically competitive. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and you know, lots of us have probably made this mistake when you first start out, and what you originally think is good, or is going to be effective, it turns out after a few games it clearly isn't. And it's how far you go down that route in terms of, do I just want to lean in completely to maximal efficiency and you know, maximal output of my units, or do I want to, you know, retain some core of theme, history, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, well, I like because I'm coming at it as a game primarily. I do enjoy, and it's not even sort of how do I make it as competitive as possible. It tends to be how do I push this one element to the max, to the limit. A bit like how I sometimes play the missions, where it's not how do I play this in a like balanced way, where sort of like my infantry's fighting this infantry squad, and I'm gonna have this one. Like, what can I do to just sort of swing it, and what can I do to just push it to the nth degree? And so things like taking only flamethrowers and dodges, and taking all the big guns, and because those things sometimes don't work. Like when I started Americans, I did start with I used to take dual platoon with two air observers because I did think this is just fun, and actually having two of them on the go at the same time, and if they get delayed, you could actually have four airstrikes coming in one turn, which seemed like loads of fun. And I didn't know if it was going to be any good, and it turned out it actually wasn't that great. I think if the points were lower, I'd probably still do it because it's enough fun, and sometimes comes off that I would still try it, but the points are just out. But it's those kind of things where I just like I'll start with an idea. Like, oh, what is the most order dice I can fit in 1,000 points? Or, oh, what is the most high explosive shells I can fit in 1,000 points? And then I'll go and mull it over and have a think, and then with the models I've got, I'll usually then try to build around the army I've already got and just pad it out to push that one element just to see what happens, basically. Because for me, that's the fun. It's the experimentation around the rules and just seeing what works and what doesn't.
So one last thing I wanted to ask you to talk about, Johnny, is about keeping the your squad's uniform, because again, something I've noticed with you, and I appreciate this, and I'll explain why in a moment, is that, you know, if you've got 4 7-man squads, they are armed exactly the same, and it frustrates me when I play against players when, like, they've got 4 or 5 squads and they're all different. And I'm like, well, which one's that again? And how do I know if that one's got a Panzerfaust and 3 SMGs and that one's got 2 Panzerfausts and 1 SMG? And it's like, I'd just much rather prefer that I know what's going on in front of me. And certainly, you know, in a tournament setting where you've got 2 hours, 2 quarters, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, I don't want to be asking all the time, Joe, remind me again how many SMGs they've got. And I, you know, because it frustrates me at times, I try and build my lists in exactly the same way. And you know, where you know, I've sent you a list in the past, and you've been like, you've got 2 points left over. And I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't fit. I don't want to give, you know, those 2 points, like that SMG to that sniper for 2 points or whatever. It's like, it's going to annoy me. I'm not going to
I don't mind it when my opponent does that as much as you do, because
it.
the reason, because of the reason that I don't do it. So much like what I was saying about where I'm making my battle plan, the moment I sit down and write my list, because I want to minimize sort of the mental load when I'm actually playing. Partly because I think it makes it easier to make decisions, and partly because I think you have a more enjoyable game the less hard you're having to think about stuff that you don't really need to. And so actually when I'm playing someone and they've got 5 different units of infantry with 5 different loadouts and they're having to think, if it's at a tournament, I actually don't mind as much, because usually what it means is they kind of they do that thing where they don't quite deploy them the way they think. Turn two, they think, oh, I wish I'd put the Panzerfaust squad over here, because then they would have been able to counter his tank, because now his tank's there. And so actually I don't mind it from my opponents, but that's exactly why I'm doing it. So I'll, as you say, I'll kit out everyone exactly the same, and that's purely just so that, because generally if it's a squad with 5 rifles and a squad with 4 rifles and SMG, that one different weapon tends not to make a difference. And so I don't want to be thinking about it. And equally, I like a really clean game. So I hate it when I do it myself, where I'll deploy my squads and then I realize, oh, one of the squads was supposed to have an SMG and I don't know which one it was. Oh, do you know what? It doesn't matter at this point. They've all just got rifles, if that's all right. Because, and that, it just makes the game a little bit muddy. Whereas if they're all kitted out the same, it's really clean. And equally, I never have that decision. I never have that moment where you're kicking yourself because you think, oh, I wish I'd put the Panzerfaust squad over there. And so generally, I'll have, it's not that every single squad is the same. It's that what I'll tend to do is I'll tend to have, for each squad, it'll have a role. So it might be, this is the close quarter squad. So they've got, if it's the Marines, they've got 3 SMGs, they've got 3 pistols. And if I've got the points, they've got 3 BARs as well. Because they're going to get right in your face, shoot you at point blank, and if you charge them, they've got 6 tough fighters, they'll be able to take the charge. And so I'll run, if that's what I'm running, I'll run 3 of them, let's say, and then I might have a long range squad where, let's just say I do take an LMG, then okay, so every squad will just be 1 LMG, and I'm not going to mix in an SMG into one of those squads because I've got points left, because then it'll confuse us. And so yeah, so whatever the squad's job is, it'll tend to be the same loadout. I'll pick what I think is the most effective loadout. So, like with my Germans, for the recce platoon, I think 4 SMGs. I can't remember if that's because it's the limit or just because I always like to have a cheap wound. That's the other thing I like to do. If, especially if you run something like assault rifles, I don't, if I'm running veterans with assault rifles, I'll always take 4 instead of 5 so that I've got one rifleman who can be the first one to die.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And yeah, with my recce Germans, I think every single squad is rocking sort of 3 or 4 SMGs and 2 Fausts. And that's not because every single squad's going to be hunting tanks. It's just that I know at some point in the battle, there'll be a squad next to a tank, and just sod's law, if I didn't give that squad the Faust, that would be the one that's close to the tank. And so it's easy just for everyone to have Panzerfaust. And it probably isn't optimal in terms of that example there. It probably isn't optimal in terms of competition, because you are wasting points on Faust you probably didn't need.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean that every single one of your squads is a bit of a deterrent, and a bit like what we were saying with the Piat earlier. If you haven't got any long-range anti-tank, but every single one of your infantry squads has Panzerfaust, all you have to do is hide them in the middle of the table, and that tank's not coming into your side of the table.
Yeah, sure.
And again, I'll do it with platoons as well. So at the Welsh Nationals, I think I ran dual platoon, and both platoons were identical. And again, that's just because it's easier for me to build the lists that way. I think that's... Oh, that might not be true, actually. It doesn't matter. So yeah, it just makes it so much easier to build a list when you've got the identical thing going over and over, isn't it? But you don't mix either, though, do you?
No, not if I can help it. I do, I do try and have units to do certain things, and if there are some points flying around, that might be when the mule team appears, because there's 4 or 5 points flying around. And yeah, if you're talking about the Welsh Nationals, I took a dual platoon to that, and the two platoons were identical up to a certain point, and then there was a few points left over, and that's where I added, the jeep in with the flamethrower, for example. But other than that, it was, identical squads in platoon one and platoon two.
Yeah, funnily, actually, that's one of the units that, going back to the mule, the Jeep is another unit that I rarely take because, what is it, 26 points regular?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so 19 points in experience and something like that regular.
Yeah, so it's in the sort of 20 points, whereas a Dodge carries 46 points. And so even if I'm only carrying two men, the difference is for those extra 20 points, I'm getting a unit that can put out pins afterwards. And equally, the other thing it can do is every now and then it might kill a small team, or it might be, if I've killed seven of the eight veterans, it might just be enough to finish that squad off. And so where I see the Jeepers, it's great when the squad's in it, but once you unload them, it's then 20 points you're not using for anything. Whereas something like a Dodge, after it's unloaded, I just treat it like a machine gun team, basically. And it's one of the problems I have with the minor nations in the game at the moment, because for some reason their trucks don't allow machine guns. And so that's one of the things, I believe we put that in the English Open pack, that actually all trucks can have a machine gun, because I don't see why they wouldn't have just sort of jerry, like, if you're going to be in in the danger zone, surely you just get the guy with the machine gun to stand on the back and just hose down the bushes.
Pass me up that brain. Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's one of those things with the game balance, because we often talk about things being unbalanced, like the Gurkhas, where they're not paying points for their special rules, especially because their SMGs aren't 3 points each, because they basically get a discount because they've got a different special rule. But that's a separate thing we'll talk about probably during the British one.
That is a separate episode,
But the area of balance you rarely hear talked about as much is those ones where the minor nations are missing something that everyone else has access to, like the machine gun on the truck, or the Hungarian cavalry, because I've got a Hungarian force. They added a rule for the Hungarian cavalry, which means they can't charge, which basically makes the cavalry, the big benefit of cavalry in the game is close quarters. So now that they can't do an assault, you've lost most of the benefit of cavalry, but well, they're still useful because they can sort of run onto objectives, and they could maybe run past and pot shot. But when they actually released the book, they'd given them rifles, and actually you need carbines to shoot, or is it carbines? I never know. I think it's carbine, isn't it?
Let's go with that. I was going to say carbine, but let's go with carbine.
You need them to shoot off the back of a horse. And so what it meant is they'd written, whereas like the French, they can charge with the cavalry, which makes them a really useful unit, and they can shoot from horseback. The Hungarians could neither charge nor shoot, which meant basically you're paying all these points for a squad where all it can do is just move up the board fast. And obviously you can dismount, but then at that point, much like the Jeep, the 20 points you've paid for your 10 horses have just ran off the table, basically.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's one of the things that I like to find, that I think I'd like to see addressed more than bringing sort of the Gurkhas down. I think those types of areas where we could just sort of bolster the minor nations to make them more playable, because most of the time people are playing them thematic anyway. And so it's not like It's not like we're gonna swing the tournament scene out of balance by giving trucks machine guns for minor nations. And so that's one of the areas that, as I say, I'm always keeping an eye out for, because I think anything to encourage the minor nations is always a positive thing.
Yeah, absolutely. 17 and 21 points before anybody says we got the cost of a jeep wrong, by the way. 17 inexperienced and 21 regular.
I'll tell you what, actually, on that note, the inexperienced transports thing is another thing where I tend to go against sort of the conventional wisdom, because a lot of people are like, oh yeah, take the inexperienced jeep, because it, but then the problem is, you obviously, it's not as big of a problem with the US, but if you're taking the Brits with a jeep and you're testing at minus one, so you're testing at a seven, the difference between rolling an eight and a seven is actually like, it's not insignificant. And so if you are going to reserve it, because let's be honest, if you're putting a bazooka in there, you're going to wait until they bring their tank out. So if they reserve their tank, your best play is to reserve your jeep with your bazooka in. And so if you've took it inexperienced, it might not turn up the turn you need it. And so actually, I nearly always take transports regular. And with the Finns, I'll actually take them veteran because they're unreliable. So because they're unreliable, they take two pins when they get hit. And so having a veteran with two pins is the same as having a regular with one, if you see what I mean. Again, one of the places that I diverge from sort of the common wisdom is I'll never take inexperienced transports.
Yeah, I've certainly been guilty in the past of listening to, the voices out there, and I've taken my inexperienced transport and I've taken that mule team and I've cut costs left, right, and center. And I might have upped my dice count, but I've been like, well, I've got some units that don't do anything. And when I really want to bring on my Jeep with my flamethrower, it's stuck off the board because I took it inexperienced rather than regular and all that kind of stuff. So I think, it is a learning experience, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think clearly the fact that it's the conventional wisdom that a lot of people are like promoting, clearly it must be working for some people to take inexperienced transports, to take the mule teams, because I imagine as well, if you are taking the veteran heavy list, the difference between 10 dice and 12 dice is a bigger difference. That's like a 20% increase compared to 18 dice to 20 dice.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the ability to put two dice in a dual platoon because you've got two four-point mules and you've got a bunch of vets is pretty good. That does make a difference. Yeah, when you're running, one of your lists where you've got, high teens or low 20s, sticking in another 4-point dice won't make that much difference, to be fair.
Yeah, and again, I think it comes back to the original point of like, I try to lean into my play style, and my play style is that if I'm using reserves, I'm using them functionally, whereas a lot of people are using reserves for sort of force preservation, where I'm going to keep my tank back until yours appears, or I'm going to keep these units off. But they're trying to be aggressive and control the game, and so they're putting all of their offensive units down early. In which case, if you've got the mules and you can put them off the table for the prep, then actually that is two dice in your favor. Whereas for me, I tend to do a lot of outflank, or if I'm using the reserve, I'll be using it offensively, and so the mules are more of a liability for me because it means they will have to go down when there's a crit bombardment. And so I imagine that also plays into the reason why I rarely run them and I rarely run experienced transports, whereas other people tend to.
And anything more to add there, Johnny?
I think we probably talked enough about building an army for now. What do you think? Was there any other points you could think of that we haven't covered?
No, I think we have kind of, but I am good though in true teacher fashion, just going to summarize. because we've both come at it in very different ways. You clearly think about what's the purpose of the army, what am I trying to achieve, how am I going to get that most effective outcome, which units do I need to do that, how many units have I got overall relative to outflank and reserve and all that kind of stuff. Whereas I'm like, what looks cool? And what have I enjoyed learning about or reading about? And okay, I've got these models. Right, now let's try and build a force. And I'll go through so many iterations until I get to something that works. Whereas you'll get there a lot quicker because you're much more single-minded and focused on what you're trying to achieve.
I mean, equally, I'll do the same as you where I'm building. Like, if I'm trying to put a buffalo in, it's going to be an uphill slog. From the moment I chose the buffalo, it's an uphill slog. And like my Brits, I've got the ram kangaroos as well, which I'm now spending overthrew the points on three transports. Like, it's going to be an uphill slog either way, but that's because I think they're really cool. But yeah, if I'm building an army for a competitive tournament, it is, I'm thinking about the synergy from the get-go. Do I have enough of this? How is this unit interacting with this unit? That kind of stuff. But that, again, that's just because my focus is on, in that situation, my focus is on the gameplay rather than, and again, even when I'm just down the club, often I've found I've hit a point now where I've played enough games that taking just sort of your general platoon with one tank, one sniper, one of this, one of that, it's if we both do that every time, you get very similar games. And so actually I am looking for sort of the edge cases, like the Sea Lion Brandenburgers, where it's almost, I quite like, it's almost like playing a completely different game. Because that one, it's a bit like playing sort of like American football when you play the Brandenburgers, because they're disguised until you get within 6 inches. So I've got sort of a, you've sort of set up a defense line where it stops me advancing without breaking my disguise and things.
And then
Yeah,
boom.
and then suddenly I have to choose my moment when suddenly the nuns take their habits off and pull out the SMGs.
The play has been chosen.
Yeah, exactly.
We've consulted the playbook and boom, off we go.
Yeah, brilliant. So yeah, synergy, that's the key point.
Rule of cool, that's the key point from me. There we go.
Yeah. And I think we both sometimes swap, but generally I think that's what we're defaulting to, isn't it?
I'll refine it, and you'll hold on to that cool unit that doesn't quite work, but it is a cool model, or you like the, you like using it. So
So I think we've capped that off. And so I think the final thing is just a cheeky little announcement maybe about the English Open that we announced last time. The tickets are now on sale. You can find the pack, the tickets, all on the Facebook event page, which I'll put in the description. That's probably the easiest place to find it, because obviously any updates as well and any questions people have about the pack or general tournament questions will appear on there. So that's usually a good place to look. It is also listed on the BHGS website, the British Historical Game Society. And so you can find it directly on there if you're not on Facebook. If you search BHGS Selwig, it'll come up. We're listed as one of the tournaments on there. But as I say, the Facebook page, if you're on Facebook, it'll be my first port of call just because you're getting all the latest questions and sort of updates.
Fantastic. Exciting, isn't it?
It is, as I said last time, I really wish that I could play in it because I've got a tank platoon lined up.
I've got a US Marine platoon lined up with like five buffaloes and an AM tank. Here we
Yeah,
go.
well, I would be doing, I think on the Saturday, I'd be doing that machine gun platoon from the US D-Day book because I do love a machine gun. And I've actually been collecting them from all the American players that I know who get them on their airborne sprues. I think it's the airborne sprue, isn't it? Where you get the prone machine gunner.
It is, yep.
I think I got your
I have
cast-offs, didn't I?
significantly fewer than I did a few months ago, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been going around collecting them because at some point I'm going to run this machine gun platoon. And so that's what I'll be running on the Saturday if I was playing in the English Open. And then on the Sunday, I'd probably be doing Shermans then, I suppose. That would be, yeah, I'd probably be doing a 105. Probably do two 105s, I think, and then three sort of Shermans with anti-tank guns, medium anti-tank guns, because it's going to run up to quite a few points, isn't it, before I take my infantry and all my machine guns.
That is true,
Yeah, brilliant. Anything else you want to add, Phil?
Thanks to everyone who have liked, shared, subscribed, and done all the things you need to do. And please keep doing it. We do appreciate it. And thanks as well to everyone who's messaged us.
Indeed, yeah. Thanks to everyone who is doing all the things Phil just said. Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now.